And this is the A3CAX and Science and TechNet. And if you have any comments, you'd like to check in, come on in. And then we'll move on to the next one with the largest flying bird that ever existed. So if you'd like to check in or if you have a comment, come on in, and then I'm going to move on to the next one.
VE3OUA.
Victor Echo 4 Alpha Quebec Uniform. Q is up to 9 Zulu Golf Zulu in and out.
And Rudy, I got you there, VE3OUA, and I think I got VE4AQU, and that last station there, I did not catch you at all. If you'd like to try again, I think you said you were just in and out.
Kilo Delta 9, Zulu Golf Zulu, KD9ZGZ.
Okay, back to that. Thanks for coming back.
Victor Echo 3, Zulu Victor X-ray.
And Tim, I got you in there too, VE3ZVX. And any of the stations that just check in, were you checking in or did you have a comment as well? I don't want to move on. In case someone had a comment about the previous topic.
Nope, just listening in and enjoying the conversation.
N5ZIQ Moy in Houston, no comment.
In that station there, I just about got you. One more time for me, please.
Yeah, that's November 5, Zulu, India, Quebec. N5 ZIQ Moy in Houston. No comment.
All right, I managed to get you that time. Thank you. And this next one here, about the largest flying bird that ever existed. Now, it's not the largest flying animal, but it was the largest flying bird. At the end of the Miocene, that was 6-7 million years at the end of the Miocene, there was an animal that flew in the skies over what is currently South America. And it was a gigantic bird, and it was called Argentavis magnificens. And there was no other bird has surpassed its size ever since. And the Argentavis had a wingspan of around 7 to 8 meters. And I think that's just about the wingspan of a Cessna. And it weighed approximately 70, 80 kilograms. And that's something very amazing for a creature capable of flight. And right now the largest bird of flight is the wandering albatross. It's got a wingspan of about 3.5 meters. And Argentavis was discovered in Argentina in the 1970s. And along with that discovery, this included bones from its wings, legs, and part of its skull. And from that find, it was very clear that the bird was of extraordinary size. And all the bones were hollow and incredibly strong, which is essential for an animal that size to be able to fly. And it certainly would not have needed to constantly flap its wings. Rather, it would have utilized thermal updrafts for gliding. It would have required, for flight, what it would have required is open spaces and strong enough winds, would likely launch from slopes, cliffs, or other elevated places. And once airborne, it would just travel probably hundreds of kilometers or miles just by gliding on these thermal updrafts. Just dropping. And it wouldn't have hunted. It wouldn't have hunted like, let's say, eagles nowadays. Indications are that it was probably a scavenger, probably fed on dead large mammals. It would have stood about 1.8 meters above the ground, and it had this enormous beak used A for feeding and B for protection. Its extinction involved many factors, such as climate change that reduced the amount of thermal current, disappearance of megafauna that were food, that were a food source for it, and changes in landscape, where that would have reduced the number of open spaces for takeoffs. Just dropping. Now, the largest, so far, the largest animal that we've been able to discover that flew was the Quetzalcoatlus, Northropi. And it was the largest flying animal, but as I said, it was not a bird. It belonged to a group of flying animals called pterosaurs. And they lived during the Triassic and Jurassic periods. And pterosaurs and dinosaurs, they had a common ancestor. The pterosaurs are not dinosaurs. They had a common ancestor. They branched off at becoming a distinct group. Physiologically, some of the distinctions between the two, pterosaurs had different hips and arm structures than the dinosaurs. So that was one of the giveaways between the two of them. So Argentavis, the largest bird that ever flew, Quetzalcoatlus, was the largest animal so far that's been discovered that could fly. And this is the H3KX, Science and TechNet, for this Saturday evening, transmitting from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Any stations out there, if you'd like to join us, or you have a comment, come on in, and then we'll move into the next one about Uranus and Neptune. And for a long time, there's thought to be these giant ice planets, like big gaseous ice planets, something like Jupiter and Saturn, but there's some new evidence that is saying otherwise. If you'd like to join us, come on in. You have a comment, come on in, and then we'll push into this one. There was a study that was published December 10th, wasn't that long ago now, in the journal Astronomy and Astrophysics, and it gives some insight into both of these planets, in particular the magnetic field. And each of these planets, they sit at the just about the very edge of our solar system, where temperatures are so low that hydrogen, helium, and water are transformed into these slurries of ice that get condensed in the planetary cores. And because of this, these two planets are referred to as ice giants. But there's a new hybrid computer model has been developed to help scientists better understand Neptune and Uranus' interiors. The problem with the earlier models is that they rely on physics based on constructs leaning heavily on assumptions from the modelers, and observational models can be too simplistic. Therefore, both of these need to be combined properly for an unbiased and physically consistent approach. The new model looked at densities of each planet's core. Both could vary from the centers. This was adjusted to account for gravity. From there, inferences could be made regarding the temperature and composition of the cores. The new computer model generated 8 possible cores for both planets, 3 of which had high rock-to-water ratios. This means that their interiors were not just ice, as what they previously thought. It was also shown that each planet had convective zones where water exists in what's referred to as an ionic phase. Extreme temperature and pressure caused water molecules to break apart in positively charged protons, hydroxide ions, OH, which is has a negative charge. And this layer is likely where magnetic fields are generated, causing both planets to have more than 2 poles. There's some chaotic interaction between the magnetic fields in each of these planets, and it causes these poles to shift and multiple poles to show up. Uranus's magnetic pole might be located closer to its center than Neptune's. But until more missions are sent to Neptune and Uranus, interior modeling of these planets is right now it's just theoretical, and they're only basing it on what scant evidence and observational data they have right now. So unless they get probes out there and can do a little bit more observation and data collection, this is the best they have for now. And this is VA3KX. This is Saturday evening. It's my home location here, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, Science and TechNet. If you'd like to join us, come on in. If you have a comment, come on in. And then, after that, the next topic here is about, again, about artificial intelligence and how it might irreversibly change how the Internet is used. And you can see that happening now. If you'd like to join us, you have a comment, come on in, and then we'll head into this one. The increase in AI, artificial intelligence, seems to be influencing our lives to the point where generative AI is starting to disrupt and impact the way the Internet provides information. Access to large language models, LLMs, and various AI tools has helped bring about what's referred to as the dead Internet conspiracy theory. The idea first emerged in the very early 2020s. Proposing that the Internet is actually largely controlled by AIs talking to and producing content for other AIs. Human-made information, therefore, is becoming more and more rare. Nowadays, you can't be entirely certain that an online interaction is with another human because there's so much intermingling with bots, you can't tell. We're now starting to see a rise in what is referred to as AI slop. This is where this can be anything from where you can be seeing video of cats playing instruments to fictional information being disseminated as facts or news. Part of the reason for this increase comes about from wanting more online content driven by clicks, and this draws attention. This draws attention to websites and raises their visibility in different search engines. Just dropping. So content, therefore, gets leveraged to draw our attention towards it and has become the primary way information is provided. Internet information mistrust is increasingly problematic. This stems from false claims made by people with, well, some of these people could have agendas or by just wanting to disrupt or even cause anger. AI tools have accelerated the way machine-generated information, data or images gets spread. Research in November 2024, this was performed by a SEO company called Graphite. SEO, that's a search engine optimization company. And they found that a number of AI-generated articles surpassed the number of human-written articles. At the time, about 86% of articles were still from humans, right up until that point, versus 14% for AI. But there was and is a continual rise in AI content. One report showed that 1 in 10 of the fastest-growing YouTube channels shows AI-generated content only. And this AI slop is replacing creators who make their living from online content, even Wikipedia. Is contending with AI-produced writings. As more AI content comes online, it erodes trust in information, especially as AI becomes better at producing images and information appearing human-made. And this then could lead to situations where human-made information is seen as false people then automatically assume it's artificially intelligent-made. Pardon me. AI is spreading convincing info that actually it requires inspection to check its validity and not take it at face value. Healthy skepticism, it needs to be used to cross-reference information before coming to any conclusion. I tend to do this when I'm looking at news articles myself now. I look at a news article, then I'll go to various other news articles, I think about a half dozen or more, and just to make sure they have some commonality. And from that, I can determine whether the article is has any truth to it or not. Getting back, on the other hand, on the other side of the coin, where AI content is deliberately used to draw in attention, even when viewers realize it is fake. This is often done to spread political misinformation. AI content can be more engaging than actually reality, and people can get sucked in really quickly. It's dropping. And AI slop is now being defined as the equivalent of plastic pollution in our oceans. It's out there in large quantities, and it makes it very difficult to navigate, and it degrades the internet experience. It seems the internet is now